The guard was silent for a moment. Then he looked at the picture on the badge clipped to Cale's chest.
That doesn't even look like you.
I've lost weight.
The guard stepped back slowly, slid his blade back into his sheath, and ran off, yelling for people to bring water to put out the fire. Cale tucked the sword under his uniform and headed the rest of the way to the font. His job was simple. They still didn't have the faintest damn idea what the big bunch of energy was going to do when it hit Heavenspire, but the bad guys required three things. They needed Heavenspire in place, which they had. They needed the systems in the processing center down below to send the right energy up, which Tern was going to stop. And they needed the font to focus the energy properly. And wrecking that was Cale's job. Many people would be offended when their commander gave them a job that boiled down to break this thing. But Cale was not many people.
All right, how hard could this be? He said upon reaching the font.
The exterior was taller than he was, and when he hopped up and pulled his head up, he saw that the crimson fire spewing out of the font flowed right along its interior wall.
All right, nothing over there.
Cale dropped back down and started circling, rapping his knuckles against the golden wall of the font as he went. It was covered with a faint, glowing eldritch pattern that looked a little like something you'd find on an old lady's couch, but was probably really dangerous runes. Cale's knuckles made a different noise on the wall, and he stopped, looked at the runes, and figured out where in the pattern there was no glowing. Because if there was one thing you learned from dating a death priestess, it was that nobody builds a secret panel so that it cuts through the eldritch runes. His fingers ran lightly over the wall, and there was a seam, just barely there. Behind him, the dragon was burning things, and based on some of the noise, Cale was pretty sure that a demon was also involved. At some point, those would be his problems. At the moment, though, eyes closed, he traced the seam and found the one rune that felt different under his fingers, with none of the magical buzz that made his hand tingle. He felt inside the rune until he found the tiny hole. Then he drew out his trusted lockpick, Eophysile, slid her into the hidden lock, and went to work.
"There we go, baby," he murmured, as something exploded behind him. "No worries here, just me and you."
He raked the tumblers gently, felt a catch, twisted her ever so slightly.
"You like that?"
"Yeah, you like that."
He sighed.
"Damn it, Tern and Dicey are right about this sounding weird, and I've got Diz now and I probably shouldn't be talking to you like that."
He felt another catch.
"I know, baby, I know, but we've got tonight, we've got this one last time, and no matter what happens, I will never forget what we had."
The panel clicked open.
"That's my girl."
Cale slid Eophysile back into his sleeve as the panel opened. He'd expected a small access panel, like he'd find on an airship, and then some crystals he could pull out and then call it a day. Instead, he faced a full-size door that opened upon a ladder, leading down a narrow hatch lit dimly by tiny glow lamps. He climbed down the ladder as quietly as only a small man with good boots could, and as he reached the bottom, which was some sort of large underground chamber lined with crystal panels, he heard voices talking.
"Cart to scrying pod 4 and bring it in," said the first voice, which sounded quick and somehow distractedly thoughtful at the same time. "We've got a lady trying to protect her baby from the flames."
"That's good. Oh, that's really good. Yes, in on her."
"More flames, Slunt," said the second voice, brusque and blunt.
"I can have it."
"No, I don't want more flames," snapped the first voice, presumably Slant.
"If the lady and the baby die, everyone gets sick and looks away, and it's over. I need the lady crying but determined and the baby screaming."
"Griffin, you're on. Sub-story."
"This is just awful," came a voice that Cale recognized from every puppet show he had ever seen.
"These people came here to see a celebration of the greatest virtues of the Republic. They spent their savings to bring their families, and what we're seeing here, the lives shattered."
"Okay, wait, I've changed my mind. The baby looks really ugly when it cries," the first voice said. "Let's shut it up. Skinner, can you flap the wings or something to shut up the baby?"
"Big noise."
"Done," said the second voice.
"Manticore, on the dragon, start spinning motive."
"The dragon is roaring now," came the manticore's voice.
"Good, that shut the kid up."
"Oh, look at those eyes."
"That's good. Yes, get the face."
It's unclear how this creature breached the wards, the manticore added. But clearly someone intended to ruin today's festival and cause as much destruction as they could.
I need to send it after a lock, said Skinner.
Fine, yes, cut to scrying pod 5. Stay wide, too. Stay in close on the face. I want to see the dragon snarling and snapping.
Kale watched from the dark little alcove, peering into a room lit only by a dozen giant crystal panes, where two black-coated men and three puppeteers, all of them wearing paladin bands, worked seamlessly as they ran the tightest con he had ever seen. Kale nodded, chewed thoughtfully on the inside of his cheek, and tried to figure out what the hell to do next. The Sidora, Derry, and Pyvik looked up at the Forge of Pessa in the temple quarter of Heaven's Spire. It looked almost dwarven, an angular single-story building whose walls were made from hammered iron and decorated only with rivets. The other temples were all tall and beautiful, graceful structures against which the Forge's ungainly functionality had always seemed jarring. As a love priestess, Desidora had seen it as a deliberate choice by the smith priests. Now, she saw it as camouflage.
You're sure about this? Pyvik asked. Every other deep, dark secret Heavenspire has been hiding has been in the Archvoyant's palace.
Which is why this one is here, Desidora said. They'd checked in the control room, and the readings had given her the direction on what she was looking for. Now, standing in front of the structure, she needed nothing but her own senses. The Forge of Pessa was built like a safe, and the magic it radiated said the same. It held wards and charms, hammered into place for functionality instead of subtlety, and all of them were double-sided, constructed to keep magic both out and in. Had Desidora attempted to create such an effect, it would have looked like a jumble of hopeful thoughts, dozens of magical forms smothering one another in a chaotic mishmash. Whoever had created these wards was a builder, a craftsman, capable of forethought and discipline and organization, and utterly bereft of sentiment.
Are you all right, Sister Desidora? Derry asked,
and Desidora smiled.
The priests of Tashaveth and the priests of Pessur do not always get along, she said.
And this Mr. Lively was here, Pyvik asked.
He may well be here now,
Desidora shrugged.
It feels like the zombie felt. It is his power and his wards. Come.
They walked to the imposing double door and swung the knocker, which rang clear like a bell. A moment later, the double doors swung open, and an acolyte of Pessa looked out at them with a smile, her muscular arms bare and her silk apron decorated with a flaming hammer and anvil.
"Greetings, sister," she said to Desidora, nodding at the symbol of Tashaveth on Desidora's robes.
"How may I help you?" "Please tell the Master of the Forge that a visitor with urgent business says, "Yinker Hesser Darer Pessa,"
Desidora said, and the acolyte jumped.
"Oh, of course. Please come right in."
The acolyte, blushing nervously, opened the door for them. The aura of magic was almost blindingly bright to Desidora, but Derry and Pyvik didn't seem to notice anything. They walked in, and Desidora followed. The temple was laid out as most temples were, with a large area for celebrations and small alcoves for private matters. Where the Temple of Tashaveth had love chambers, however, the Forge of Pessa held rooms where great works were designed and crafted. Desidora understood that the priests and the guildmasters were in constant negotiations over what was brought out for the public and when. The acolyte left them with a blushing apology in the main hall, where iron-bound wooden pews looked out upon the obligatory anvil-shaped altar. The walls were lined with great works of craftsmanship, mostly in iron, but with some wood as well, and a few pieces of finer materials. There were blades and shields, horseshoes, gears, and even a large clock.
"They have all those pieces, but no art," Pyvik said. "Always found that peculiar."
"The smith priests of Pessur believe that for something to have value, it must have a practical purpose," Desidora said. "Nothing in the hall is purely ornamental."
"Why would they hide the gate to the world of the Glimmering Folk in a temple?" Derry asked as they waited.
"I am not sure we're thinking about it the right way," Desidora said. "I don't think they hid it here. I think it was made here. The ancients worship the gods just as we do, and Pessa is the god of craftsmen."
"What better place to create a gate between worlds than here?"
Pyvik asked, looking around.
"The question is, how do we find it? Can you sense anything magical?"
"Too much, in fact."
Desidora was trying not to squint. Everything was overwhelming, the colours sharp and the sounds ringing. The wards pressed in upon her like blows from a hammer.
It's very strong, but I think I'm sensing wards that...
She squinted, then rested her hand on one of the pews.
They're trying to reinforce reality.
That makes sense, said Derry, surprisingly. The glimmering folk aren't real, not the way we think of it. The wards must help keep the gate to the Shadowlands closed.
Then that is what I must alter, Desidora said, nodding and squinting through the wards, whose auras made any other magic almost impossible to see. We alter these, and the ancients will believe that the glimmering folk have returned, that the gate is open.
When Locke plans a con, she never aims small, Pyvek said, and shook his head.
It must have been hard, Desidora said, pretending to mourn her all these months.
We do what we have to, said Pyvek, and smiled. I miss her.
Derry looked at Pyvek with a question, but before he could ask it, several priests of Pessa came out toward them.
Is it true?
Asked one of them, a tall, bald man, whose arms showed old scars from years at the forge, and his fire-trimmed silk apron marked him as priest-master of the temple.
You are the one who spoke the words.
I am, Desidora said. And by ancient treaty, you are bound to hear and obey by the 24.
Yes, said the master. That is what he said as well.
He has been here, Desidora asked. What did he do?
He asked many questions, the smith priest said grimly. And when we did not have the answers he wished, he attacked.
What?
Desidora looked around the main hall, which, while not as clean as the Temple of Tashaveth, did not have the look of a room that had recently seen battle.
What sort of weapon worked best against him?
Derry asked, and the smith priest shook his head.
Our weapons were useless, he said,
frustration wrought keenly on his face. Everything was still too bright and too sharp, but Desidora felt something in the auras, something that felt wrong.
No offence, Your Holiness, but I am surprised he left you alive, Pyvek said.
The smith bowed.
He didn't, my good man. I'm afraid he slaughtered us brutally.
Desidora realized what the aura meant as everyone in the main hall came at them, death shining sadly in their eyes. The great hangar door of the mine's main docking bay was closed, which made it a lot easier to land sneakily. Tern rolled, sort of, and ended up somehow tangled in about 30 different ropes. Icy came back to his feet, with no sign of discomfort beyond doing something to the leg that had been holding her. He might have been popping his hip back into its socket. Tern decided not to ask.
All right, Tern said, getting back to her feet. Elves and dwarves. The Dutta from the Lepitemperum made it sound like they were enthralled, so they've probably replaced the golems.
Do you believe they will be hostile? Icy asked.
No idea. If we are lucky, they are just doing their job. And if we don't bother them, they don't bother us.
As the wolf, fangs bared, hackles raised, Ululenia said from beside them. She was in her natural unicorn shape now, or at least as close to it as she got anymore. Tern thought she looked ready to rip something's intestines out rather than purify water or make flowers grow.
Ululenia, Icy said. They are slaves. They do not act of their own free will.
Then we will release them from such a sad state, Ululenia said, looking over at them and smiling fangily.
I do not believe this is how you would wish to arching ardor.
Icy shook his head and then stepped back.
Ululenia, bejeweled bosom, please stop.
Hey, listen, it may not even matter, right?
Tern said, stepping between them.
They might not even notice us, and if they don't notice us, they won't attack. And then nobody has to rend or tear or anything, right? Right?
She smiled brightly at everyone.
I just killed the hell out of the troll that killed Hessler, and I really thought that was going to make me feel... right. I thought I was going to pump my fist and say that was for my baby. Only it didn't work. It was too fast, and I was just scared. And now the troll is gone, and the man I love is still dead anyway, and I'm grappling with a lot of disappointment right now. The only thing letting me hold it together is getting this job done. So we are going to go in there and hope the elves and dwarves ignore us, and if they attack, then we'll worry about it then, okay?
Icy reached out and put a hand on Tern's shoulder.
I am sorry.
As am I.
Ulilenia's mental voice was quiet.
I will.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, good.
Tern marched forward to the hangar door.
God's willing, we have nothing to worry about.
She pulled it open, revealing the hangar inside, full of crystals of all shapes and sizes, spread out in organized patterns on the ground. All the elves and dwarves in the entire world looked up from the work they were doing, saw Tern and Icy and Ulilenia, and drew their weapons.
Well, son of a bitch, said Tern.